The outing is what we would call the world's first LGBT matchmaking and music festival in the west of Ireland in County Clare.
It's not easy to be a gay, lesbian, bisexual or transgender in Ghana, and because most people believe that being gay or lesbian is devilish.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international LGBT radio magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. Scotland and Luxembourg celebrate the new year with Marriage Equality. A unique Irish festival matches gay and lesbian singles, and Rainbow Faith inspires a gay Ghanaian activist. Those stories and more this week, because you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm John Dyer V.
And I'm Greg Gordon.
With News Wrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting LGBT communities around the world for the 3 weeks ending January 3rd, 2015. Same-gender couples in Scotland began tying the knot at the stroke of midnight on December 31st. The legislation opening civil marriage to them took effect on December 15th, but Scottish marriage laws mandate a 15-day waiting period. Gay and lesbian couples in civil partnerships, however, were able to begin converting them to marriages on December 16th. Civil marriage equality is now the law of the land across Great Britain in England, Scotland, and Wales. In late December, the Irish government scheduled a public referendum on the issue for sometime in May of this year, although a specific date has yet to be announced. 85% of the population identifies as Roman Catholic, but despite the vocal opposition of Irish bishops, as many as 3 in 4 people in recent surveys support opening civil marriage to lesbian and gay couples. Northern Ireland's ruling socially conservative Democratic Unionist Party, which has strong political ties to Protestant churches, especially the Free Presbyterian Church of Ulster, has consistently blocked efforts to introduce marriage equality legislation.
Same-gender couples in the tiny European nation of Luxembourg began tying the knot on January 1st, the first day they could do so under legislation that passed overwhelmingly in Parliament in mid-June 2014. Openly gay Prime Minister Xavier Bettel vowed to open civil marriage to lesbian and gay couples when he took office in late 2013. The bill also extended adoption rights to those couples.
The U.S. Supreme Court has already announced that it will review a challenge to the state of Louisiana's ban on civil marriage for lesbian and gay couples on January 9th, which will be the High Court's first conference of 2015. Justices decide during those private meetings which cases, if any, will move forward to oral arguments. Justices could also consider a review of the 6th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals decision upholding the bans on civil marriage equality in Kentucky, Michigan, Ohio, and Tennessee. The 6th Circuit broke with 4 previous federal appeals court rulings that had overturned the bans in more than a dozen states.
The first civil marriages of same-gender couples in Florida were scheduled to take place on January 6th, following a definitive edict by federal Judge Robert Hinkle on January 1st that his ruling overturning the state's civil marriage ban last year applied statewide. A conservative law firm and Florida's Republican Attorney General Pam Bondi had fought marriage equality for gay and lesbian couples tooth and nail. The twice-divorced Bondi and the independent law firm threw in the towel following Judge Hinkle's January 1st order. But clerks in about a dozen of Florida's 67 counties have announced that some of their staff hold strong religious beliefs against same-gender unions and would be uncomfortable performing civil marriage ceremonies for them, so those county clerks have decided to end all courthouse wedding ceremonies.
In what some are calling a transgender version of the Matthew Shepard tragedy, 17-year-old Cincinnati, Ohio area teen Leela Alcorn, born Joshua, killed herself in the early morning hours of December 28th by stepping in front of an oncoming tractor trailer. She left a suicide note blaming her Christian conservative parents for refusing to acknowledge her female gender after she came out to them at the age of 14, and for only taking her to Christian therapists to treat her depression. Activist blogger Dan Savage has called for Leela's parents to be prosecuted for child abuse. "The only way I will rest in peace," Alcorn wrote, "is if one day transgender people aren't treated the way I was. They're treated like humans with valid feelings and human rights. Gender needs to be taught about in schools. The earlier, the better. My death needs to mean something. Literally hundreds of media reports around the world about the tragedy have already ensured that. And even though her mother refuses to call her Leela and has referred to her son in all media statements, an online petition has already gathered more than 65,000 signatures demanding that Leela Alcorn's headstone bear her chosen name. Another petition calls for the enactment of what's being called Leela's Law to ban the practice known as transgender conversion therapy, similar to debunked efforts to turn lesbian and gay people into heterosexuals. An increasing number of jurisdictions have already outlawed that practice.
A district court in Beijing has issued a landmark ruling that a counseling center in the southeastern city of Chongqing had no medical basis to offer a cure for homosexuality. Like many gay people in China, Yang Teng said he was pressured by family members to get married and have children. After undergoing hypnosis and electric shock treatments that the staff told him were safe and effective ways to make him heterosexual, the still gay Yang sued the clinic for damages. The court ordered the clinic to pay Yang the equivalent of about $560 and to post an apology for offering the treatment on the front page of its website. The court also ordered an investigation to determine if the clinic holds a valid license to operate. Yang said in a video statement that he wants all parents in China to know that attempts at so-called gay conversion are now illegal. Although the country stopped classifying homosexuality as a mental illness in 2001, a number of clinics across China still claim to offer cures for homosexuality.
In other news, about 35 people were injured on December 19th when a group of men forced their way into a holiday party being held at a private venue in the capital city of Harare by the advocacy group Gays and Lesbians of Zimbabwe, or GALS. According to the organization's website, at least a dozen men beat the attendees using logs, iron bars, empty beer bottles, and clenched fists, and at least one of the attackers brandished a gun. They also demanded cash and personal electronics from the partygoers. GAL's offices have previously been raided by the police and invaded by thugs with ties to the youth wing of President Robert Mugabe's ZANU PF party. The statement on the group's website charged that the latest attack was not a random act of attempted robbery, but that of militia acting on someone's superior orders to orchestrate violence. The Southern African country's long-serving President Mugabe is notorious for his verbal assaults on sexual minorities, which the GAL's statement said have created a climate and culture of impunity and lawlessness, as evidenced by the actions of these thuggish men to hunt down LGBTI people in our communities, vicinities, and homes to inflict harm.
Security forces in Gambia arrested three men in late December for committing the crime of homosexuality, which could put them behind bars for life under a law signed in October by President Yahya Jammeh, who rivals Zimbabwe's Mugabe in homophobic rhetoric. During national television coverage of the arrests, the West African country's National Intelligence Agency appealed to the public, especially parents and landlords, to help them stamp out homosexuality. The European Union and the U.S. have reduced financial aid to Gambia since enactment of the draconian anti-gay laws, and the mostly Muslim nation has increasingly looked to the Middle East for support. A failed coup attempt at the presidential palace on December 30th, while Jammeh was on a private visit to Dubai, will likely increase the strongman's already tight grip on power.
More than two dozen men who were arrested along with a bathhouse owner in Cairo in early December for debauchery and perversion appeared in court on December 20th. Debauchery and perversion are the typical charges against gay men in Egypt, which has no specific laws against same-gender sex. Many of the accused hid their faces, wept, and begged the court to acquit them. The trial will continue later this month. Egyptian TV journalist Mona Iraki has been widely condemned by media outlets around the world for allegedly arranging the raid with police officials by promising that she would have cameras rolling for her exposé of what she called the biggest den of perversions in the heart of Cairo. but an appeals court has reduced the sentences from 3 years to 1 year in jail for each of the 8 men who were convicted in November on charges of promoting indecency and inciting debauchery for appearing in a widely viewed YouTube video that was characterized by authorities as the first same-gender wedding ceremony in the country. Equality activists blame the escalating crackdown on sexual minorities in religiously conservative Egypt on recently elected President Abdel Fattah al-Sisi, who seems to be trying to out-Muslim the previous Muslim Brotherhood regime of Mohamed Morsi.
But finally, homophobia apparently cost the First United Methodist Church in Alexandria, Indiana, its congregation. Many parishioners walked out in protest in early 2014 after the church's openly gay choir director was fired. Adam Fraley had held that position for almost 6 years. His partner was well known to the congregation, and Fraley said his sexual orientation had never been an issue until a new pastor took over. Less than a year later, Pastor David Mantor announced that financial problems were forcing the church to close. Even though as many as 80% of the congregation had abandoned his church after he fired Fraley, Mantor claimed that the closing was not due to that situation whatsoever.
That's News Wrap for the 3 weeks ending January 3rd, 2015, produced by Steve Pride, written by Greg Gordon, and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles.
Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap from This Way Out is brought to you by you.
Help keep us on the air and in your ears at thiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast. For This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon.
And I'm John Dyer V.
We'll slip you past the big Queers Keep Out sign for a risky rendezvous in a repressive region later in the program.
I wonder
who wrote the book of love?
Thousands of eligible heterosexual singles looking for love have been making their way to County Clare, Ireland for more than 150 years, hoping to get lucky at the small town of Lusnavarna's annual matchmaking festival. For the past 2 years, the town has opened its doors to a similar event called the Outing. Happily married correspondent Chris Wilson just went to Lusnavarna for the news story and the great Irish music, of course, but she had plenty of questions for the founder of the festival.
I'm here with Eddie McGinnis. We're here in Dublin, Ireland, to talk about the Outing, a wonderful festival that Eddie just produced, and he's here to tell us about it. What's the Outing, Eddie?
The Outing is what we would call the world's first LGBT matchmaking and music festival in the west of Ireland in County Clare.
What do they do at the Outing?
What we actually do in the Outing is not only matchmaking, but is traditional Irish music and other acts, but with a gay twist. And this is the world's first time that this has been done here in Ireland.
Tell me about the matchmaking part. How does that happen?
Oh, where do we start? We're lucky is Lusnavarna has been worldwide known for having the longest running matchmaking festival. It's over 157 years old. And that means that way back then, the farmers used to, at the end of the summer, all come together and not only enjoy themselves, relax after the harvest has come in, but actually start looking for a wife. And that's where matchmaking kind of started in the west of Ireland, but not only just in the west, but all over Ireland. But the Lusnavarna became the most famous. And not only that, but 2 years ago, we opened up the market to the LGBT market.
So how does the matchmaking actually happen? Here are a bunch of single guys. How do they find the right match?
Okay, it's not only open to guys, but girls, but all those are in between. And that's what we love about it.
And it is LGBT as well.
Oh, very much so. In our first year, we did target just a gay and lesbian. But we got really, on our second year, more interested from bi and trans to actually come along and actually get a taste. But it's not only that. It's a safe environment. We are going into a village of 800 people strong. And this year alone, we had just under 3,000 LGBT individuals coming into the village itself, from not only in Ireland, but the UK, Europe, and from the States and Brazil as well.
So Is there a matchmaker?
Oh, there definitely is. We're lucky. We have the fourth generation matchmaker on site. His name is Willie Daly. He's world famous for what he does. And so what he does is, taking the place of those apps, we all know them, and all those online dating sites. But this is a traditional individual who sits down, takes your particulars, goes around the bar and venues and chats to each individual. And over the month, not just that night, but over the month, we'll be constantly thinking of all the individuals who've went to him, given him his name, given your details to him. And he's constantly thinking, going, that person would be suited with so-and-so, that'll be suited with so-and-so. And over that month, he would actually introduce them, and even on occasions, ring them going, there's a really nice person here, I think you should come back to the village and meet. And he's done this for now fourth generation, that's over 40 years. And he himself was matchmade by his own father, and his father was matchmade by his grandfather.
Wow. So tell us more about what else goes on besides the matchmaking.
We're lucky. What we decided when we were devising the whole festival itself and using the name The Outing, we outed the whole village and wanted to embrace everyone, no matter who they were. And that's where we took the traditional matchmaking festival and the gay market and merged the two of them together. And what we have done is, with traditional Irish music and international Irish stars, performers, and artists, we've put a whole different gay twist on it. And that's what's the whole thing involved. So we take over the whole village. So all the different venues have something different on. In the Hydro Hotel is the main venue. It's the HQ, as we say. And this year alone, we had just under 1,500 people going through the doors. We had international dance clubs there. Not only that, but we had the international artists like Brian Kennedy, Brendan Courtney, Catherine Lynch, we had Panty Bliss, who was our host. But also at the same time, what we're trying to do is branch out, not just to the village, but even going into all the different areas. So we have midnight walks on the burn for all those who would like a bit of romance. But also we've done a picnic on the Cliffs of Moher. And the Cliffs of Moher are one of the most famous sites here in Ireland, and it's a must-see site. And this year we flew the rainbow flag on the Cliffs of Moher, and we had an amazing picnic there as well.
How many people attended the event?
In our first year, we just had under 2,000 people came to the event itself. And that means not only LGBT, but also the straight community was involved. The locals, everyone, all came. But this year we had over 3,000, which was really good. The instant success. And now we're already working towards next year, the 2nd, 3rd and 4th of October in 2015.
Where can people find out more about The Outing?
We're on all the social media sites, from Facebook to Twitter to Instagram, everything. But the main site itself is theouting.ie, and that's theouting.ie, and that's where you will find us.
Well, thank you very much for being with us.
It's a pleasure.
The Outing founder, Eddie McGuinness, was interviewed by This Way Out's Chris Wilson.
Hello, I'm Carol.
And I'm Maria.
And together we're Zrazy. And we're crazy about This Way Out.
Our Sapphic Nomad friends Katie Cook and Maggie Young have sent us audio postcards from many less than LGBT-friendly countries. But Ghana is the only place where the traveling documentarians were warned as soon as they stepped off the plane how perilous their quest could be.
Scenic beaches, large markets, djembe drumming, and wild game parks all help to make Ghana a country easy to love. Old forts and slave castles, built and used by European colonizers, still line the coast of this small country in West Africa and are visited by travelers from all over the world. Also known as the Black Star of Africa, this former British colony established independence in 1957. And, unlike many of its neighbors, Ghana has tended to be one of the most stable countries in Africa. But despite its welcoming and friendly spirit, we also found that the country has a strong undercurrent of homophobia. After clearing immigration at the airport in Accra, we were immediately met with a large sign which read, "Ghana warmly welcomes all visitors of goodwill." Ghana does not welcome pedophiles and other sexual deviants. Indeed, Ghana imposes extremely harsh penalties on such sexually aberrant behavior. If you are in Ghana for such activity, then for everybody's good, including your own, we suggest you go elsewhere. In Ghana, same-sex male acts are illegal and risk up to 10 years or more of imprisonment. As to be expected, with such discrimination and an official criminal status, it was difficult at first to find LGBT life there. And though for the most part homosexuality has to be deeply hidden, we did succeed in finding an organization that works in part on LGBT issues. While not an LGBT-specific group, the Center for Popular Education and Human Rights in Ghana is an organization that was formed on the premise of combating the impact of AIDS in Ghana. When we met with the director of the center, he told us that unfortunately they were moving away from LGBT-specific programs. The association with such work, he said, had turned the organization and its employees into targets, and that the pervasive stigma against the LGBT community was hurting government funding for the organization and was making it difficult for employees to move on and find new jobs. Despite such a grim outlook, we were happily surprised to meet Leonard Glover. In his late 20s, Leonard is out to his family and community and seems to be universally loved and respected by all of those around him. Like the majority of Ghanaians, Leonard's Christian faith plays a strong and central role in his life, and he is the leader of the Ghanaian branch of House of Rainbow, an LGBT Christian fellowship. We sat down and talked to Leonard to learn more about what it is like to be LGBT in Ghana.
Being an LGBT in Ghana, it's not easy to be a gay, lesbian, bisexual, or any other thing, or transgender in Ghana. And because most people get this belief they have behind their back that being gay or lesbian is devilish, and it's not accepted in the community. So it's like anytime people get to know you are gay or lesbian, you can't even go in the mix of maybe a social gathering. And when we come to the church, most churches in Africa, especially in Ghana here, when they get to know you are gay or lesbian, the first thing they will do, they don't need to ask you anything, but they have some rules in the churches. If you are gay or a lesbian, they'll just ask you not to give out offerings, not to sing whilst the church is singing maybe a song from the hymn books. You will sit behind the congregation. You won't, even have the right to have your communion. You wouldn't be able to do anything. You just come to church, listen to the word of God, get set and go home. That's it. But what we gays in Ghana are saying, our rights needs to be respected. Because it's like if you are gay now and you get a police issue or a police case and you go to the police station right now, if the policeman gets to know you gay, you're putting behind bars. That's what they do here. They won't even listen to any issue of yours or nothing. So day in, day out, gays issue are rather becoming worse in Ghana.
Since so many of the churches in Ghana seem to discriminate against LGBT people, we asked him if he ever struggled with his faith.
Yeah, I sometimes sit and feel bad. I sometimes read through some parts of the Bible and I ask God, God, why me? Why me being gay? Why me being homosexual? I love you. And it's like, I don't know, but a friend always tells me that God alone knows best. God alone knows why he created you like this. God alone knows why you are homosexual, you transcend men. So just keep on and, never say to yourself the love you have for God will fade. You should rather always try to shine it and bright it and, get more into him and know him more. So that's my prayer now. And it's like it's sometimes challenging to me. It's really sometimes challenging to me because the Bible never told me that Jesus Christ came to discriminate or stigmatize anyone. God said we should love everyone. God loved everyone.
Finally, as the leader of the group, we asked Leonard about the House of Rainbow.
House of Rainbow Prayer Fellowship is an LGBT Christian fellowship, and its headquarters is in the UK, and we have in branches in Kenya, Nigeria, South Africa, London, and Ghana. And I'm the local leader in Ghana here. And our purpose for this ministry is bringing the LGBT community to God. And it's like most people or most LGBTs not going to churches now is because people discriminate there. We discuss the Bible, what the Bible said about being gay, because, you know, most Africans believe that Sodom and Gomorrah was destroyed because of homosexuality. But me reading the Bible and going deep into the Bible tells me that Sodom and Gomorrah was never destroyed because of homosexuality. It was destroyed because of the saints. And homosexuality wasn't the only sin in that country at then. No. I always laugh and smile when I hear people calling the FM stations saying these people need to be sacked in Ghana, these people need to be banned, blah, 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 blah. And because of them, Sodom and Gomorrah did this, Sodom and Gomorrah does that. Even this afternoon, someone just said, I was just passing by, the person was in his car, and he was like, we're going to ban you guys very soon. You know, it's like I laughed. And the other guy said, Sodom and Gomorrah is now in Ghana. I turned back, looked at them, and laughed because they are hypocrites. They know nothing about the Bible. They just wake up and say what our forefathers used to say. We're in the 21st century, and this is the right time for them to rise up. They are sleeping, and they should wake up.
This concludes part one of our two-part series from Ghana. To learn more about our Sapphic Nomads project, please visit our website at www.nomaddocumentary.com. Till next time, this is Maggie Young with fellow Sapphic Nomad Katie Cook, reflecting on our time from Accra, Ghana, for This Way Out.
Thanks for choosing This Way Out, the international LGBT radio magazine. This week, John Dyer V, Chris Wilson, Zrazy, and Sapphic Nomads, Maggie Young and Katie Cook contributed program material, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out thanks the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation, the Yavanna Foundation, the estate of Christopher David Trentum, and everyone who participated in our 2014 year-end campaign for making this program possible. You can still get great programs on CD at thiswayout.org, where you'll also find links to our Facebook and Google Plus pages and our blog. Follow TWO Radio on Twitter, email tworadio@aol.com, or write to us at P.O. Box 1065, Los Angeles, California, 90078, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappelle and everyone at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon. Happy New Year, and thanks for listening online at thiswayout.org and on WDFH Ossining, New York, Dade City Community Radio, Dade City, Florida, 2MTM Kunambul, New South Wales, and more than 200 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Stay tuned.